Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
I'm Anna Garcia with True Crime News, the podcast. Every crime tells a story. Every story demands justice. True Crime News, the podcast, covers breaking crimes, investigating high-profile and under-the-radar cases. Every week, we dive beyond the headlines, exploring the effects of violent crimes on victims and search for justice. We hope you join us as your weekly source for true crime news. Listen to and follow True Crime News, the podcast, on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. Welcome into the Gabe Kuhn Show. I am Connor Dunning, former Memphis Tiger videographer, filling in for Gabe Kuhn while he is out. You can find me at cdunning929 on X and Twitter. I'm also over on Blue Sky. Just search Connor Dunning, and I should pop up. Big Memphis sports weekend. We were blessed with a lot of basketball. Memphis Tigers, Memphis Grizzlies. We will open on Penny Hardaway and the Tigers picking up a huge W against Clemson on the road in OT. Really exciting game. A lot of big takes from that game, too, including the three-point shooting of one Tyrese Hunter. I'm not sure if people are aware out there what he is shooting on the season, but we will get into that here in just a few moments. We'll also discuss the Memphis Grizzlies and their split weekend win on Friday night against Brooklyn, loss last night against the Los Angeles Lakers. And, George, what I want to discuss with you when we get into the Grizzlies is why we keep doing this pendulum swing of emotion after every single Grizzlies game. The NBA, I don't know if you know this, 82 games. A lot of basketball to be played this season. You don't have to have a major take after every single basketball game. Sometimes your team just loses. We will get into why the Grizzlies lost last night and why they won Friday night, and if it has any overarching major takes that need to be said about the Memphis Grizzlies. We'll get into that after we talk about the Tigers. 425, 430, I'll be joined by the Associate Executive Director of the AutoZone Liberty Bowl, Harold Grader. We got to talk Bill Belichick. We got to talk AutoZone Liberty Bowl. We got to talk Memphis Tigers in their bowl game tomorrow. We'll also get into some Heisman conversation as well. Then we'll have David Cobb from CBS Sports. I'm going to talk to him about the Memphis Tigers as well. We also might talk about Zach Edey and Dalton Connect because they did have a showdown. I don't know if you saw it, the free throw showdown that they had last night. I'm not sure they like each other very much. And then we'll get into the blitz and then wrap up the show. I am joined by the Honorable King George, Italian George, George Ruggiero, at KingGeorge94 on Twitter. George, awesome, awesome sports weekend.
Just a great weekend of sports in general. Very entertaining. A lot going on between really most of the major sports.
Yep.
You know, that we're tuning into here. I just have one point. I don't want to say contention, really, okay, about the Grizzlies here. Who's we? Don't lump me into this pendulum swing.
No. I am also not in the we. The we is the Grizzlies fandom.
Okay.
The Grizzlies social media.
Grizzlies Twitter is
Grizzlies
a different
Twitter.
That's a different entity.
And
that's
then
not,
Grizzlies Facebook is just a haunted house of things. If you want to wade into those waters every once in a while.
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. When I say we, I'm talking about they, not
okay.
us. Not like us.
No.
Not like us, George.
Definitely not like
not
us.
Not like us. But before we get into the Grizzlies, we do have to start on the Memphis Tigers.
Oh.
Took down number 16 Clemson on the road. Tyrese Hunter had 23 points, including the go-ahead three-pointer with 59.3 seconds left in overtime. Memphis rallied past number 16 Clemson, 87-82. Massive, massive win for Penny Hardaway and the Memphis Tigers. Memphis shot 52% overall and 48% from three after Clemson had only been allowing opponents just under 40% shooting from the field and 30% shooting from long distance. Hunter had 7 of Memphis's 12 threes, including 2 critical baskets from behind the arc in the extra period. Right now, Memphis Tigers today up to 21 in the AP poll, 22 in the coaches poll. And I think my biggest takeaway from this game, one, Tyrese Hunter and his excellent play. Colby Rogers showed up. PJ Haggerty showed up when you needed him to. Moussa and Dane Danger had much better games. But my biggest takeaway is people have still been holding the sins of last season's Tigers team against this one. And listen, I get it. They had 2 sloppy games in a row. One of them ended up being a loss. Louisiana Tech, Arkansas State. I get it. Those games looked rough. You were able to escape with the win against Louisiana Tech. Arkansas State kind of whooped you. They kind of whooped you in your own building. Huge upset. I understand why you had a bad taste in your mouth heading into this game against Clemson. But when we talked about it on Friday, I said, all the Tigers got to do is come out and punch them in the mouth. You've got to have a good first half, and that is what Memphis did. They had a good first half. They stayed in the game. They hit big shots when they needed to. And I do think that the team rebounding was a big factor. Like before, you know, at the end of that game, Tyrese Hunter got that 3. It came off of a huge offensive rebound, so that was massive. They stayed cool. They stayed calm. They stayed collected. Most notably, though, they stayed together. You never saw those shoulders shrink. You never saw that head drop like we saw last season. I do not think the Memphis Tigers of last year would have won this game against Clemson. I understand they have a win against Clemson, but after a loss against Arkansas State, there's no way that team would have walked into that building and taken care of business in the way that they did. There's no way that when they got down at the end of the second half, they would have been able to come back, force overtime, and then taken care of business in overtime. There's no way.
It would have snowballed.
100%. This Memphis Tigers team is built different than the one last year. Literally and figuratively built different. Penny Hardaway has done a great job of putting this team together. They have veteran leadership that is leading to wins. PJ Haggerty, down the stretch, will score when you need him to. Tyrese Hunter, head of your snake on the defensive end, also one of the best shooters in college basketball this season. I was shocked when I looked up his shooting. I knew it was going to be great because he's had a couple big games. UConn game, big game.
This game. Big game.
Big game, 7 threes. When I looked it up, though, this man right now, this season, is shooting 52% from 3. 52% from 3. That's huge.
It is. That's
huge for the Memphis
massive.
Tigers. I saw a stat today. 5,000 or so college basketball players. 135 are shooting 35% or better from 3 this season. The Memphis Tigers have a few of them. Tyrese Hunter, 52%. Colby Rogers, 44%. That's what he came here to do. When you brought in Colby Rogers, you brought him in to knock down threes, and that's exactly what he's doing. He's also playing defense at a very good level. PJ Haggerty, a lot of people had questions about his three-point shooting, 39% from 3 this season. Big time.
Been solid.
Solid. PJ Carter, 33%. He hasn't played too much, but he's shooting 33%. Nicholas Jourdain knocking him down when he's getting them, 35% this year. Not bad. They're getting shooting from people this season, and it's very important for this Memphis Tigers team. We talked about at the beginning of the season, what we saw in Maui, they showed us that they can score at all 3 levels. They can score from 3, they can score from mid-range, score in the paint, then you can get PJ Haggerty, Dane Danger, getting to the free throw line at a high rate. Very important moving forward. What I have seen from this Tigers team in their early season is very encouraging heading down the stretch. I understand that they dropped one against Arkansas State, bad loss, can't make excuses for it, but they bounced back with a massive win against a very good Clemson basketball team. Good defense. Tigers took their punches and punched right back. And again, that team from last season would not have done that. And that is why we have got to be careful when we are comparing them in the negative, because it's a different group of players. You got one guy left over, Nicholas Jourdain. Coaching staff, completely different. They're trusting these guys. The rotation's been smaller. I've liked to see it. But in this game, your big guys showed up. Tyrese Hunter, 23 points. Colby Rogers, 22 points. PJ Haggerty scored when he needed to. Got you to the free throw line, 6 of 8. Got to the free throw line when he needed to. 12 points, but he had 6 assists, 8 rebounds, though. 34 rebounds as a team. Won the rebounding game.
What did we say on Friday?
Got to win the rebounds. Win the rebounds. Take care of the basketball. Taking care of the basketball was a big deal, too. They didn't really do that much. 16 turnovers, but you had 17 assists. You won it! You won the assist-to-turnover ratio. Great! It was much better than the last game.
And that's what we were really calling for.
Yeah.
Like, if you can limit the turnovers to a point to where you're getting more assists or creating more on the offensive end with the basketball and keeping it there. Offensive rebounding was solid. 10 offensive boards.
Big time.
That is big time.
Moussa Cisse, 4 offensive rebounds. PJ Haggerty, 4 offensive rebounds. And you pointed out before the show when you were talking about this game, Moussa had a couple moments in this one. Important moments for the Memphis Tigers.
Especially at the beginning of that second half because, you know, you had just hit that buzzer beater to really take the lead. Mm-hmm. You know, that 1-point lead, it was tight in the first half. Shoot, I mean, obviously, it went to overtime.
Great first half.
Tight in the second half as well. But to get those, you know, paint points from Cisse where he was just there and getting to the rack at the beginning of the second half, that sets the tone. Just like how, for me, probably the MVP of that first half was Colby Rogers. Yep. I mean, neither team was really shooting that well at the beginning except for Rogers. He set the tone that this is not going to be like that game against Arkansas State.
I've been really impressed with Colby Rogers this season. When he came in, a lot of us expected that he was going to be a three-point guy, but he has found other ways to have impact in the basketball game beyond the three-point line. He's hitting mid-range shots, he's getting to the rim, and he's playing pretty good defense. The Memphis Tigers had 7 steals in this game, 5 blocks. They showed up on the defensive end. We knew that they would. It was a bounce-back performance. I don't have much else to say. It was a really good win by the Memphis Tigers, and it is why I am so bullish on this team. Every time they have gotten knocked down a little bit, they have responded. And again, that is the major difference between this team this year and last year's team. They respond. They don't get down. They play together. That's the biggest thing. They're playing together. They're not ISO trying to score. They're moving the basketball. They're moving as one on the defensive end. It's really important. Now, you got a couple big games coming up. Virginia, State, Ole Miss. How do you respond in those games? What do we say? Go 2-2. If you can go 2-2 in these 4, you're set up nice heading into conference play. Because I think it's naive to think that the Tigers are just going to win every single game in their conference. They have the talent to do it. It wouldn't be shocking if they did it. But I don't think it's fair to expect it. They're going to drop one. They're going to maybe drop 2. But you got a couple big wins. Not only are you picking up some big wins, but some teams that you've beaten are picking up big wins too. I don't know if you've seen where UConn is all of a sudden. Back in the top 25, back in the top 15, have a couple big wins recently. Baylor, beat them. Gonzaga, beat them. Thank you, UConn. Memphis Tiger fans need to be the biggest UConn fans for the rest of the season. Dan Hurley, he's a lunatic.
Oh, yeah.
But that team winning basketball games is good for the Memphis Tigers, and it will help your resume at the end of the season. And then picking up a win against Clemson on the road, massive. Tigers deserve to be in the top 20. I'm glad they're back in it. Top 25. I'm glad they're back in it. Just joyous day to be a Memphis Tiger fan. Picked up a big win. Tomorrow you got a bowl game against West Virginia. Trying to keep that rolling, the momentum rolling for Memphis football. Should be able to pick it up. Rich Rod's going to be back there. That's going to be interesting. West Virginia.
I don't think he's going to have that much of a
It's still interesting. Yeah. It's still interesting that he's around.
Yeah, he'll probably be on the sideline, but I don't know how much coaching he'll be doing.
Yeah, good time to be a Memphis Tiger right now. Enjoy the win. Enjoy the win. Now we got to move on to the Grizzlies. Friday, that was awesome. Easy win. Brooklyn kicked their ass. Taylor Jenkins, Dennis Schroeder got into it. Santi Aldama, angry Santi. Love me some angry Santi. That clip of him being all pissed off and it just cutting to John Conchar like it's an episode of The Office was fantastic. But they took care of business. Really, the biggest takeaway from that game, the starters were awesome. Santi Aldama was awesome. Jaren Jackson Jr., when he plays like that, one of the most effective players in the NBA. You could argue he's the most important Grizzly. You really could because of his defense and his offense. When he has it going like that, it's damn near impossible to beat this team. Desmond Bane had a big game. I know there's a lot of conversation happening today about Desmond Bane. I don't really understand some of the takes. Has he been slumping this season? Sure. We're also ignoring a really good game he had on Friday against the Brooklyn Nets. I think he was plus 20 in that game. People need to just relax a little bit when it comes to Desmond Bane. They don't need to trade him. I don't think they need to shut him down. I don't think that he needs to be the sixth man for this team. I think y'all are ignoring the defense that he plays. He is absolutely slumping from three. No doubt about it.
Yeah.
But since he was in college, this is someone who has shot 38% from three consistently. Water will find its level. Desmond Bane will find his level. He has gotten it going a little bit. He had a bad game against the Lakers, sure. They all had a bad game against the Lakers, though. Everybody had a bad game against the Lakers, except for Zach Edey.
And you know what? Real quick, we're saying, oh, they had such a bad game against the Lakers. I understand they went down double digits in the first quarter, and they really couldn't get, you know, a ton of footing in the game. They only lost by six. If this is...
Kinda. The Lakers and the Grizzlies were trading shots at the end of the game.
Absolutely.
And Pete even pointed it out. It was really a double-digit loss that they just happened to lose by six.
Either way, the fact that, you know, we've seen in games past and in years past and even in games across the league, when a team goes down by double digits that early and seemingly can't get their footing,
sure,
they even more so take their foot off the gas and end up losing by, you know, 15, 20. The fact that this team is still trading shots with them, still playing hard, I think that's, you know, not necessarily a positive to try and take out of a loss, because it is a loss against a team that you're competing against in the Western Conference, but we got contributions from players up and down the lineup that we didn't necessarily expect from this game. And again, these are guys that are going to be important for you down the stretch and in this Western Conference with the depth. I'm not going to sit here and try and sell you a bill of confidence or something saying, oh, this team was great in this game, they shouldn't have lost. No, they were not good in this game. They lost the game on the road. I understand that. Did we expect Edie in his first game back to have a double-double?
Yes and no. I mean, we saw that he had success against the Lakers in the past. I didn't expect him to play down the stretch like he did, and I will say, I thought, some people have been trying to put this loss on Jenkins again. What are we doing? It was on the players, y'all, and it's okay to say that.
It is.
these guys are awesome. John Morant's awesome. Jaren Jackson's awesome. Brandon Clark, awesome. Desmond Bane, usually awesome. They were bad last night, and it's okay to say that. It's okay to say that they were bad. It doesn't have to be about the roster needing change. You don't have to trade all these guys. Desmond Bane doesn't need to be the sixth man. You don't have to shut him down. They were bad last night. They got beat. Did they fight? Yes. That's great to see. They fought until the very final buzzer. They were fighting. John Morant was pissed off in the fourth quarter. That's what you want to see from your star. You want to see that fire. You want to see that emotion when you're losing basketball games. That's a good sign for the future. Taylor Jenkins, in my opinion, was why they were able to get back into that game. He found a lineup that worked. And who did that lineup include? Zach Edey, Luke Kennard. DMP.
Luke was firing,
CD,
man.
Luke Kennard back in that game. A lot of people firing off takes in the first quarter. Oh, looks like we're heading towards another Luke Kennard. DMP. Nope.
He
was good.
Firing, too.
He was good. 3 or 4 from 3, 12 points, plus 18 in the game. One of the reasons they got back into the game. Closed the game. Was on the floor. They just missed shots, y'all. They missed shots. I love Ja. Love him. He was bad last night. Couldn't hit a shot.
They
missed a lot around the rim.
Sub 40% from the field.
That being said, bad whistle, too. Bad whistle.
Again.
It continues for the Memphis Grizzlies. A lot of those shots Ja missed down the stretch around the rim, he got smacked. You know how many free throws the Lakers shot?
I don't.
How many? 39 free throws. A lot of them down the stretch. A lot of ticky-tack fouls. But again, Grizzlies got to learn how to defend without fouling. It's just a bad game last night, y'all. You don't have to have these pendulum swing of takes. We all agree that if this team can make a trade for somebody like Cam Johnson, they probably should. If they can make a trade for somebody like Dorian Finney-Smith, who, by the way, is having a career year shooting, probably at a better price than a guy like Cam Johnson, too, helps you defensively, can hit a three, don't hate it. Those guys make sense. Some of the other names that people are throwing out don't make any sense, y'all. Don't make any sense. We have got to stop having this emotional breakdown after every single loss. They have won 10 of 12 games, y'all. This is a good basketball team. And I keep hearing, well, those are bad teams. You want them to lose? They supposed to lose those games? Because I'm sorry, last time I checked, good teams beat bad teams. And that shouldn't be a negative.
It's usually how it goes.
Very odd. Are we forgetting about Boston? In Boston, beat that team?
It's a pretty big win.
They've beaten a couple good teams this season, y'all. Yeah, they've dropped some others, too. They've dropped some games against Brooklyn. Dropped some against the Bulls. They've had some bad losses, but they've had some very good wins. It's a long season. Are y'all tired? Y'all have got to be tired. Because I'm going to be honest, some of you, it seems like, care more about being right and saying, I told you so, than about this team's success. We don't need a major take after every single loss, y'all. We don't need the goalpost moving after every single loss, y'all. This is a good basketball team. They're going to make the playoffs. When Ja, Jaren, and Bane are on that floor, they're really hard to beat. But they have to play well. Last night was not about the coaching. It was not about the rotation. It was about your stars just didn't play well. And theirs did. Anthony Davis was unbelievable last night. 40 points. Unreal last night. If they get that AD every game, holy crap, but they don't. They don't. LeBron looked like he took time off, didn't he?
It sure did.
He was in that tank or whatever, recharging. Took vacation. Where was LeBron? He was on vacation, y'all. Where do you think he was?
He was taking a break.
The NBA Cup was happening. They weren't in it. He said, I'm going to take vacation. There's no mystery. He does this frequently. In the past, he's done it. He takes a break, he comes back, and then he plays well. That's what happened last night. They were better than you last night. They just were. The home team in this series this year has won every single game. Grizzlies jumped them at home. Lakers have had them at home twice. That's how it's probably going to go.
We say that like we're shocked.
I still think the Grizzlies team is better than this Lakers team.
Oh, yeah.
If Ja had a better first half, if Jaren had a better first half, and if Bane played well, they would have won that game. But they didn't, so they lost. It's that simple. Gabe and I say it all the time. Basketball is a simple sport. Stop overcomplicating it. You know what you have to do to win basketball games? Make shots. You know what the Grizzlies didn't do last night? Make shots. It's as simple as that, y'all. They didn't make shots. 39% from the field. 32% from three. What's that bar? 33%. The guy gets 33%. 33% is the bar for success for the Grizzlies. Santi Aldama. Seen a lot of, well, Santi doesn't show up in big games. What? Since when? Since when does Santi Aldama not show up in big games? Well, I want to see it in the playoffs. What? How can we see it in the playoffs right now? We're a quarter into the season. Patience. Patience is a virtue for a reason, ladies and gentlemen. Everybody got to relax. It's a good basketball team. They had a loss last night. Got their ass kicked. It happens. Doesn't mean they're bad. Doesn't mean you got to trade everybody. You can find the right trade, do it. But I'm not benching Desmond Bain. I'm not trading Desmond Bain.
Oh my gosh, that's I need y'all to get a ridiculous.
Grip. I need y'all to get a grip. I need y'all to pay attention to his defense. I need you to pay attention to his playmaking. Is he a little banged up? Sure. If he needs to sit for a little bit, sure. Get him healthy. That toe, that oblique. Something's messing with him. You can tell. He's trying to find his place in the offense. Give him time, y'all. Give him time. I'm not worried about Desmond Bane. I'm just not. I've seen Desmond Bane have crazy success in the NBA. I'm not worried about him. I need y'all to chill. Stressing me out. Got my blood boiling on a Sunday night. Can't even relax and watch my movie. What are y'all doing? All these takes.
I mean, if Connor can't even watch his movie.
If I can't even watch a movie, something's wrong, y'all. Something's wrong. They were bad last night. It's okay. They'll bounce back.
That's fine.
They'll bounce back. They were bad.
It happens.
All right. Next up, Harold Grader, Associate Executive Director of the AutoZone Liberty Bowl, is going to join me. Got a lot of college football discussion to have. Stick around. You're listening to Connor Dunning on the Gabe Kuhn Show on 99 FM, ESPN. Welcome back into the Gabe Kuhn Show. This is Connor Dunning filling in for Gabe Kuhn while he is out. I am now joined by the Associate Executive Director of the AutoZone Liberty Bowl, Harold Grader. Harold, how are you?
Doing great. The countdown is on, not only for Christmas, but also the AutoZone Liberty Bowl. Our teams come rolling into town on the 23rd, so we are just days away, and so it's wild and woolly, but we're looking forward to it, and especially looking forward to the game on the 27th.
Absolutely. Before we get into all the college football news and the college football playoff coming up this weekend, let my listeners know where they can find tickets to the AutoZone Liberty Bowl.
Indeed, whether it's the bowl game or any of our events, you can call us at the world headquarters of the AutoZone Liberty Bowl, 901-795-7700. Again, 901-795-7700. Could get you good seats to the game. Again, any of our events, the pregame buffet, the day of the game, the rodeo, you name it, we've got it. Give us a call.
The big news of college football last week, Bill Belichick is now at North Carolina as their new head coach. He got introduced during a press conference. It sounds like he's going to be there for 5 years, about $10 million a year. And the great debate is happening of, will Bill Belichick work out at North Carolina? And what does it mean for college football when you have a coach like Bill Belichick coming from the NFL into college football, wanting to, you know, change the athletic department of a blue blood in college basketball like North Carolina? Just, do you think he is going to be successful at North Carolina, or do you think that it's a bit of an odd fit?
Well, we'll see, but I think for me, initially, the question isn't, will he be successful, quote-unquote, what constitutes success? Mm-hmm. I just think it's a real change in the way college football organizations are going to be formed. We've seen a little bit of this. I'll use Ole Miss as an example. We've talked about this, where Lane down at Ole Miss with his NFL experience has more or less created his organization modeling it after an NFL franchise. Ole Miss, Alabama, several, numerous now have a general manager over personnel on the college level as opposed to a recruiting coordinator or whatever that title used to be. So I think that's really the big change here. Again, we've seen it coming. We've seen some steps down that road. Now this is humongous, no doubt. This is a huge change where you're bringing in one of the all-time great NFL coaches into the college world. Usually it's been the other way. You know, some college coaches wanting to get away from recruiting and everything that's been involved to go to the NFL so they could only coach ball. This flips the whole thing on its head. But I think this is where we are and where we're headed. So success, to your question, Connor, will be, I think, one, obviously, wins and losses on the field, but just the operation and how that impacts North Carolina's ability to recruit, manage roster, manage NIL, manage transfer portal. I really think that we are headed towards a total upheaval of college football. Not that we haven't seen that already, but especially in the way coaching staffs and the football organization is created and shaped and formed, that it's going to model the NFL. And no one has done it better than Bill Belichick and the Patriots under his leadership. So I think we will see more and more of this. And, you know, and as you step back and look, more so than ever, Belichick is coming to North Carolina really not to coach football, but to be the CEO of North Carolina Football Incorporated.
Right.
Let's face it. So it's going to be interesting to see, one, who he brings in to manage and run the player personnel piece of it, just like an NFL team, and then also who is he going to bring in on what I refer to as the football side.
Right.
The X's and O's. I think those are two distinct lines of delineation there of running player personnel and then coaching ball. And, again, it'll be interesting to see who he brings in, who wants to work for him. I would think a lot of coaches, probably some folks that have worked with him in the past who know him, know the drill, know the process, will be jumping in the boat with North Carolina. So, again, that's what I'm looking forward to seeing. Who comes to the team? Who comes as a part of his new created, new formed organization in North Carolina? But I give kudos to Bubba Cunningham, the AD. Known Bubba for a long time. He's a Notre Dame guy. Came up through their ticket office. We met Bubba when he was the athletic director at Tulsa early in my years with the AutoZone Liberty Bowl. So, obviously, North Carolina has not played and perform to the level they want, need, expect. No shot at Mack Brown, one of the legends of college football, but a change needed to be made. And I'm sure Mack Brown, like some other coaches of his era, where we are today is not what they want, enjoy, why they are involved, why they want to coach football, why they want to be around young men. That all has changed. Obviously, the first big one was Saban.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Mack Brown, we've seen it on the basketball side. So, again, kudos to North Carolina and the leadership there. They're all in. I mean, this is earth-changing situation here. So, it will be very interesting to follow.
I think that's one of the reasons it's so fascinating is that we have seen somebody like Nick Saban step away from college football recently because it became a different job. It wasn't just about coaching X's and O's. It wasn't just about leading young men. It was you had to have this GM sort of mindset. And Bill Belichick is going to be bringing in Michael Lombardi, former NFL executive, to help him out on that side of things. And I think that that will be interesting, especially when he is trying to build an NFL program within college football. But the biggest thing to me that it has signaled is, truthfully, the power of college football in this new era of NIL, in this new era of television deals. Because for a blue blood like North Carolina to restructure their athletic department, restructure their NIL fund to move away from basketball, even though we know that they're going to be okay because they have somebody named Michael Jordan on that side of things to help them out, so they'll be fine there. But it is interesting to see a program like North Carolina say, you know, for us to move into what we want to be with this new era of college football, with realignment happening, we have to push football to the forefront. And you've even heard the University of Memphis talking about that recently, where it doesn't matter how much we love basketball in this city. It is, you know, everybody lives and breathes Tiger basketball. But at the end of the day, football is what moves the needle.
Yes, absolutely. And I've been saying this for years, Connor, that all of these moves, whether it's been conference expansion, conference realignment over the last 5+ years, and the issues and topics we're talking about today, it is all football driven. Football is driving the revenue through television. And look at the incredible numbers that ESPN and Disney and ABC generated this year, all on college football. A lot of that on the back of the SEC and the new TV deal, SEC with Disney, and that's ABC, ESPN. But it is all football driven. And I've even seen one or two mentions over the weekend about the future of North Carolina perhaps wanting to go somewhere else.
Right.
Right. We're not doing this just so we could go win more football games. We're making this incredible change, this earth-moving change to our program, because we envision us potentially, maybe hopefully, being somewhere else. Translation, the SEC. So we'll see. I think that's out there. And it's not just this Belichick situation, Connor. We saw a week ago Oklahoma State restructuring the deal financially with Mike Gundy, their head coach. There was a little bit of a rub there, finally got it worked out. And now at Florida State with Mike Norvell saying, I'm going to give back $4.5 million to help our situation. So, obviously the dollars are huge. Trying to figure out the money is driving these ADs and presidents and all the other leaderships around the country crazy, because next year there's the $20.5 million, you got to share the money with the players dilemma that these schools are all facing of how and where are we going to come up with all this money. You got to do it, and restructuring contracts, totally turning upside down your program for the future, like North Carolina. So it is an impactful time. We think we've seen changes these last 4, 5, 6 years. Just hang on. There's more coming. And a lot of the impetus of that, Connor, is all of the CFP contract, all the bowl contracts, the TV contracts that are tied into all of that postseason, all of that runs out after the 25 season. So as we go into 2025, all of those new deals, the structure of the playoff, how that's going to impact the bowls, how that's going to impact an organization like us at the AutoZone Liberty Bowl, all of those questions yet to be answered. But it's all about football. It's all about the money. And how and where are you going to get those revenues now that we're moving into the era of sharing dollars, big dollars, sharing revenue with the athlete?
Part of me wonders if this is a bit of a response to the Florida State-Clemson struggle that was happening with the ACC this season. I think North Carolina probably looked at that and said, okay, this is where it's going to go. Because even though the AAC is in one of the power, it is one of the power conferences right now, I think we would all agree that it is probably the fourth one, maybe third ranked one.
Certainly from a football standpoint.
I think North Carolina, though, recognizes where a lot of us think this thing is going, where it might turn into two major conferences kind of, you know, eating the rest of them. And they're saying, we need to be prepared to be able to jump into that. And
Indeed.
Bill Belichick and having, you know, a fund of NIL for college football is where we need to go. Because when you look at the actual football success of North Carolina, they haven't won an ACC championship since 1980. So it's, I don't think that they're necessarily chomping at the bit to have that much success in college football, but they are preparing to make sure that the program can be viable in this new era. Because when you look at the television contracts, it is fascinating how much power the SEC is really about to have, especially over a conference like the ACC. Gabe, a few months ago when he was looking at it, kind of found that the SEC has a bit of a kill switch on the ACC if they would really want to. So I think North Carolina is saying, okay, we've got to get ready for whatever may happen. And Bill Belichick and having $20 million for football certainly feels like a good start.
Indeed. And again, the vision and the courage, I would say, on some level, to make a huge step like this that totally turns the model upside down, you got to hand it to them. And I think it will be successful. Just from an organizational standpoint, because again, you know, Belichick, I mean, he's still a football coach.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that he's not going to be involved on the football side. He absolutely will. But it's going to be very interesting to see portal, who comes, who goes at North Carolina, who he brings on that staff. You mentioned Mike Lombardi. He's going to be running the personnel side.
Right.
But as far as the football side, I mean, it will be Belichick. He will have his – it will be his type of ball. Now, take a step back a little bit, not to get too far off the path here of what we're talking about. You know, obviously he has his folks who think his success at New England was all about one guy.
Oh, Tom Brady,
And it very well may have been, because you look pre-Brady, post-Brady – makes you wonder. So we shall see what North Carolina football looks like. But at the end of the day, as one of the oldest sayings is, it's not always about the X's and O's. It's about the Jimmies and the Joes. But they are putting themselves in prime spot to have a huge impact on the Jimmies and the Joes.
Right. I know this for sure. They're going to have a hell of a defense because Bill Belichick teams are very good at defense. So I know that that's going to happen.
But you better go get a quarterback.
You better go get a quarterback, which North Carolina has had the last few seasons. They've had some of the better quarterback prospects we've seen in the NFL. Weirdly enough, one of them is now a New England Patriot. So look at that. They already got some synergy there between the Patriots and North Carolina. This past weekend, we did name a new Heisman Trophy winner in college football. Travis Hunter won with 552 first-place votes, a total of 2,231 points. Ashton Jeanty came in second with 309 2017 points. It's actually the closest Heisman race we have seen since 2009.
Yeah, basically a two-man race, as you said, with the numbers. Not surprised by that. You know, the other two young men, Dylan Gabriel, Cam Ward, they got the nice invite to New York. Hope they enjoyed their time in the big city. But, yeah, as you said, it really came down to two guys. And not surprised that Travis Hunter was the winner. When you have that one-off where you've got a guy in that special situation, and that's only happened twice now, in the last 25 to 30 years, where you have a guy playing almost the entire ball game, playing both sides of the ball, that's a special athlete. And it's not just playing both sides of the ball, but it's being an impactful, very good player on both sides of the ball. And he was. No big surprise that that Travis Hunter was the winner. But Ashton Jeanty, heck of a year. Glad he got that exposure, that acknowledgement of the year he had and the season that his football team is having. Because, you know, they're having a, they get the first round bye,
Boise State round bye.
Boise, they're in the hunt. We'll see. We shall see if Boise can pull off a national championship. But kudos to all four of those young men to be finalists and get the trip to New York and just have a special week, special weekend in New York. There's nothing like it.
It truly was a special year in college football when it comes to the talent that we were able to watch on the field. And I will say, I was an Ashton Jeanty supporter, so I was a little disappointed that Travis Hunter won, while also understanding why he won. The two-way play is remarkable, and it's certainly hard to do. And Colorado had a fantastic season after the past few years that they have had. They were bowl eligible, which is a big deal for Colorado. Ashton Jeanty just almost broke Barry Sanders' record, which I feel like got under-discussed, oddly enough. And if he had played the second halves that he sat out, he probably would have broken it before, you know, the college football playoff game coming up this, you know, in 2 weeks where he should be able to break that. So I will say I am happy that a quarterback didn't win it this year. It was a nice change of pace from a quarterback winning it every single year. So congratulations to Travis Hunter. But coming up this weekend on Friday, December 20th, our first college football playoff game in the new 12-team era. I am very excited for this one. This seems to be the game where people aren't super fired up for it, but it does have some intrigue in that some expect that an upset could happen here with Indiana and Notre Dame.
It could. I'm not particularly expecting that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I held my evaluation of Indiana until like the last week or two. Because I wasn't sold on, even though they were winning, and I know how hard it is to win. I don't care who the opponent is. Every win is, you can't take it for granted. But the only negative that I have in assessing Indiana is a fairly average to mediocre schedule. But you can only play the games they schedule for you, right? And the one big one they had, they came up short. So when they have played a quality opponent, they haven't come through. Can you do that at Notre Dame? Two in-state schools. So, I mean, it's not going to be like a true road game for Indiana because they're playing the game in the state of Indiana.
Right.
I haven't looked at the forecast, so I don't know what the weather's going to be like on Friday. But whatever it is, they're all used to it. You know, if it's cold and rainy or whatever.
I'm going to guess it's probably going to be that, considering the time of year it is.
But I expect Notre Dame, with the home field, they're, 7.5-point favorite for Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
I expect Notre Dame to get the win. Will Indiana put up a fight? Absolutely. Could they pull a surprise? Yes. You know, it's playoff ball. It's postseason. Anything can happen. But I'm expecting Notre Dame to hold the line and get the win over Indiana.
I think really what it comes down to for Indiana is their run defense. If their run defense shows up, they're going to have a chance in this game. Because even though they got, you know, kind of blown out by Ohio State there for a little bit, their run defense showed up. They were able to keep the running game of Ohio State under control. And if they could do that against Notre Dame, that's kind of the blueprint that NIU had with Notre Dame when they were able to take them down earlier in the season. Saturday, though, is the big game, the big day. That's the day where I'm going to wake up, sit down on my couch, and I'm not going to move for about 12 hours because you have three fantastic games. SMU at Penn State, Clemson at Texas, Tennessee at Ohio State. SMU and Penn State is going to be interesting. I expect Penn State to win this football game. It is a big game, so you do have the James Franklin ghost, ghost of big games hanging over this. But I think a lot of people agree that SMU kind of snuck their way in to the college football playoff because of that fourth quarter comeback and that 56-yard field goal that Clemson hit. So what do you expect from this game? Do you think that we're going to get any fireworks, or do you think it's going to be the game that kind of, you know, Penn State should win this one and they will win this one?
You know, looking at all three games, Connor, you know, I'm expecting the home team, going back even to the Notre Dame game, I think the four first-round games, home team wins. Are they going to all be close, hard-fought? If you have a bunch of turnovers, things could swing the other way, and the home team takes it in the shorts? Absolutely. To the specific question, SMU, Penn State. Yes, James Franklin does have that reputation. Big games, not always delivering. SMU, they get in by, you know, a gnat's eyelash with the comeback.
Mm-hmm.
I think Penn State takes care of business. Could it be a close game? Will it be a close game? I think it will be a close game. So Penn State, be on alert. But I think Penn State gets the W.
Yeah, to be honest, I think the same thing's going to kind of happen in that Clemson at Texas game. I agree with you. I expect all of the home teams to win in the first round of the college football playoff. Clemson, I think, kind of snuck in the same way that SMU did. It's the two ACC schools, I think, some people have issue with them being in because they were considered to be a one big bid league until that fourth quarter happened in the ACC championship game. So that's why I think a lot of people for this upcoming weekend, the big game is Tennessee at Ohio State. That's
absolutely
the one with the most intrigue. It's the best matchup that we have of the weekend. You have the Ryan Day hot seat conversation happening. You have Nico playing in a huge moment and trying to be the quarterback of the future for Tennessee. Josh Heupel trying to get a huge win for the Volunteers. I am a Tennessee football fan myself, so I am nervous about this football game. I think they have a chance, but Ohio State is, on paper, the most talented team in the country.
Indeed. I agree with that. I'll say for Tennessee, it does start with the quarterback play, mm-hmm. I think. And I've seen Tennessee a couple of times this year. And if Nico can start well, and that's completing his passes early, I'm thinking back to the Alabama game in Knoxville. He was missing his receivers early, settled down, second half, much different story, mm-hmm. And a lot of success. And that's what turned the game against Alabama. So in this one, I don't think you can go on the road in a playoff game and start slowly. You got to come out with your A game from the first snap on. And if he can do that, if Tennessee can play error-free ball, get a turnover or two from the other side, they can flip this thing and get away with the win. I do think of the four games, I do think this is going to be the most competitive, the closest of the four. But I do expect somehow, some way, Ohio State and, again, the other home teams on the weekend to get the win.
Yeah, I think if Dylan Sampson can show up and have a big game for Tennessee as well, if they can establish the run game to free up Nico a little bit, take that pressure off of him, I think that's going to help. Because Ashton Gentry's had such an amazing season on the ground that some people kind of forgot about Dylan Sampson. He was the leading rusher in the SEC. He had a touchdown every single game. He broke the record for touchdowns this season. He was phenomenal for them. But I agree with you. If you get Arkansas Nico, you're in trouble. But if you can get that second half Nico, have him settle down, not overthrow his guys, it's really about decision-making with him and not panicking in the pocket.
Sometimes he
wants to run because he can use his legs, but just stay calm. Get rid of the football sometimes. You don't have to get positive momentum on every single play. Sometimes it's okay just to survive and live another day.
Yeah, and for Nico and that coaching staff, I'm sure they have been talking about being in the moment, not being overwhelmed by the moment. Yes, you're at Ohio State. Yes, this is a playoff game. But face it, the reality is Tennessee plays games like this almost every week
SEC. Oh, yeah.
So don't get caught up or don't get overwhelmed by the moment.
Right.
I think that's one of the messages they've been drilling into Nico all week long in preparation for this. So that to me will be a factor in as far as you said, is it good Nico, bad Nico?
Right.
But I think the young man responds and we'll see. I think this is going to be the closest of the four games this weekend.
Hopefully tomorrow's bowl game isn't a close one for the University of Memphis. I would like to see a blowout against West Virginia.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that's going to happen, but I think most Tiger fans would be very excited for that. It is the Scooter's Coffee Frisco Bowl. Right now, the Memphis Tigers are a 4.5-point favorite, and I think it's very similar to last year where you had, ultimately, you didn't reach the goal that you wanted to by making it to the American Championship and winning the American Championship. I think that that was a lot of people's bar for success for the Memphis football team this year, including Ryan Silverfield. You've heard him talk about it. But if you can pick up a big win here in a bowl game against a power school, have some momentum heading into the offseason. You've already got a good transfer portal. You've got a good recruiting class coming in. You got Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium going through renovation right now. You can just continue that momentum for Memphis football.
Yeah, you hope from a Tiger perspective that they didn't leave it all on the field in New Orleans against Tulane, and that in their minds that was their playoff game, their championship game. I think from a personnel standpoint and the state of the two programs, obviously a lot of stability right now with Memphis. The transfer portal exits have been minimal. On the other side, you have a West Virginia team, a team that I saw late in the year, saw them in Morgantown against Baylor. But a lot has happened since then. Obviously, there's been a coaching change. Mm-hmm. They're going to have an interim. Rich Rodriguez has been hired for his second time around with West Virginia. Don't think that, like the Tigers, I don't think they have been impacted too much by the transfer portal yet. So we'll see what the vibe is. I would think the vibe around the two teams is, again, which Tiger team? Did they leave it all on the field? Are the Tigers still motivated? I would hope so, think so. An opportunity to play a Big 12 school, in essence, their playoff game with West Virginia on the other side. Are they just showing up and just want to get it over with?
Right.
You know, they're a team that lost their last game 52-15 to, ironically enough, Texas Tech, the team for the Big 12 that's playing in our game in the AutoZone Liberty Bowl. But West Virginia, they had won three of their last five but got hammered in the last one. That's what sealed the fate of Neil Brown, the coach, who's no longer there. So, again, the vibe around the two programs, I think, is different. And I think Ryan and his staff do a good job of keeping their guys focused. You know, we still have something to play for. West Virginia, gosh, not sure what that vibe is, but you got to think with all the change, all of that, when you look at the vibe around the programs, you would think the Tigers have an edge there.
Absolutely, and I think that the Seth Hennigan factor is a big deal. It's going to be Seth's last game in a Memphis Tiger uniform. He has given them four great years, and that's why I do think the team will be fired up to try to send Seth out with a win.
And let's hope so. And again, going back to Nico's situation mm-hmm. in a playoff game, and then Seth's situation, last college football game, basically a home game for him. Again, this is where, you know, Ryan and Tim Kramsey, the OC, have got to be managing Seth. Yes, he's a seasoned veteran quarterback, but you still have those emotions of playing your last college football game. Oh, and it's also basically at home. So same thing we were talking about Nico, I would say with Seth, is keep it within himself. Don't try to do too much. Don't try to overperform, because there's going to be pressure.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
My last game happens to be at home. Got a lot of family, a lot of friends here to see me. Just stay within what you've been doing. Don't press. Don't try to do too much, because when you start forcing the ball, we know what that means. Usually means turnovers. So for Seth, I think that's what he has to manage, and I'm sure that's been a part of the messaging with Seth as they have been preparing for this game.
Absolutely, and that's why I do expect them. It seems like the last few games they've been trying to establish the run with Mario Anderson, who has been fantastic for the Memphis Tigers this year. I bet that they try to help settle Seth in with just some screen passes to Mario and let him run the football, loosen up that defense a little bit, and then take a couple big shots. I'm excited for the game. I want the Tigers to go out on a big win this year against West Virginia. Before I let you go, one more time, let the people know where they can find AutoZone Liberty Bowl tickets. You got Texas Tech, Arkansas, big game December 27th.
Big game on the 27th. That's Friday, a week from this Friday. 6 o'clock kickoff at Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium. You could call us at 795-7700 or go online either to our website, AutoZoneLibertyBowl.org, or to Ticketmaster.com for your game tickets. Again, other things going on. That's what makes it the quote-unquote, as we refer to it, as the bowl experience. Mm-hmm. The football game is just part of that, but there's more going on. Some of it's free, like our parade on Beale Street the day before the game, the Bash on Beale pep rally at Handy Park following the parade. So, look, Tiger fans, I hope to see you in Frisco tomorrow night. I will be there. But come home, enjoy your Christmas, and then day after Christmas is the parade and the pep rally and all that stuff. Come down, be a part of it, interact, have fun with our fans visiting from Arkansas and Texas Tech, and just be a part of it. It's a community event, and we invite you to join us.
Harold, thank you so much for taking time out of your very busy schedule right now to spend some time with us and talk college football.
Thanks, Connor.
Yes, sir.